Good. All right, we're here with Robin Cox.
Hi.
Hi. So now, first off, why don't you tell me about your job here at Cal State Long Beach?
Okay, I teach music theory and music composition courses here in the music department.
Great. And you've been doing that for how long?
This is my 11th year.
11th year. And then when did you start your group?
This is the 10th year of the group, actually. This is we're coming at the end of our 10th year.
Wow. So, do you have any kind of, because I know you've been sort of in the midst of it all along. I mean, do you have any kind of perspective as where it started and where it is now?
Well, it started, the motivation in part was to give my own creative work an outlet. I didn't want to just sit around waiting for other people to decide to do my work. Also to take some ownership and control over those performances as well. It started as a quartet of violin, cello, and two percussionists. And 6 years ago, we added a bass clarinet doubler as a fifth member. And along the way, too, we added audio engineer and the requisite amplification of microphones and some electronic playback that go along with that. So it has evolved from just a four-person operation to what is now myself, four other musicians, and two audio engineers, and an awful lot of cables on stage as well.
Now, did you find that your writing was demanding these additional expansions of the group, or did you find that as you expanded the group, your writing began to change in concert with that?
Some degree, both. Partly it was when you have a violin and cello and two percussionists mainly playing vibraphone and marimba, it felt like there wasn't much of a bass end to the ensemble. In a string quartet, the cello functions fine in that respect, but in this one it felt like it really worked better as a tenor voice, so we need something to round out the sound. Mm-hmm. And while the bass clarinet essentially has the same pitch range as the cello, it has a rounder, warmer sound quality, and so and essentially it was adding a bass voice. Mm-hmm. And it did give more writing options, that is true. There was a number of reasons to do it.
Great. So how your primary instrument is violin, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And does your approach to writing come from, because a lot of people write on the piano and then move to other instruments, does your writing really come from your playing the violin?
Not much. Matter of fact, less than one might imagine. I actually am rarely at the violin to generate ideas. It happens occasionally, but I did grow up taking piano lessons and actually was a jazz pianist for a while through at least part of my college years. So I still have enough piano facility to get around to do my writing. So I am at least in the vicinity of a piano keyboard usually when I'm writing.
Great, gotcha. Now, I know there's a lot of murkiness about musical classifications, but is there a phrase or a term or a descriptive language that you favor in describing what you do?
Maybe not that I favor, a few that I can tolerate. it is problematic. I usually, when people ask what do we sound like, I usually, the closest I can come is just to describe the instrumentation, gives people an insight. Then, of course, secondary, I tell them to go to the website to listen to our music or audio excerpts. But
what's the website?
RobinCoxEnsemble.com.
Okay.
A few things I can tolerate are is a term some people use called post-classic. That this is sort of somewhat beyond what would be considered classical chamber music. I'm not particularly inclined towards describing the work as a whole as minimalist or postmodern or even avant-garde at this point. Though I do think I'm amongst a generation of classically trained performers, composers that are looking for a way to, in a natural way, to incorporate your everyday cultural surroundings and not just the canon of classical music to work. So I don't see what we do as a sort of stuffy recital program or chamber music in the sense one would normally think of those terms. And yet I think what we do has subtlety and complexity enough to demand listening, maybe in the sense that one would go to a jazz club to listen to a jazz group. So I think it works well in best in a casual concert format, perhaps is a good way to put it.
Interesting. Well, you know, one of the things that I remember about your music is that, well, for one thing, even though it has, you know, was four, now five, this sort of very limited kind of voicing, the diversity of your compositions really was quite amazing. I thought that there were some of the pieces were very sort of serious, and some were really playful and sort of exuberant, and there was a real sort of emotional diversity to the music that you were kind of sharing.
Well, thank you. It is the challenge when you run your own group and don't consider it exclusively about your music, but when you're writing at least half, if not more, the content of what you're going to play, then it really does put you in the mindset of having to develop a show and not just think as individual pieces, but having some contrast to the work. So that was an early, an immediate and very strong interest and problem I had, is that how do I actually fashion a body of work for this group that isn't just yet one more piece that sounded like the last one, particularly when you have an idiosyncratic instrumentation, so there's not a lot of repertoire of other people's to draw upon. So I was immediately cast in the role of having to generate a lot of the work and think hard about exactly what you said, is to have some diversity to what you're doing.
Right. Well, one of the other things that you've done, at least as far as I remember, which is a long time ago now, is that you always have included other composers as part of the repertoire, right?
Yeah, and it's always been the design. It's I never wanted to be the only person writing for this group, but without a big commissioning budget, it's hard to do that in a methodical way. And with an ensemble of an unusual instrumentation, like I said, there's not a lot to fall back on. So that's been a challenge along the way, to find things that worked for the kind of sound and music that I wanted to include. But yeah, I'd be most comfortable if it was, say, 50-50. Mm-hmm. In terms of, we did a concert here last year, actually Castle Language, in which it wasn't a single work of mine on the program. And the one coming up this Friday will have four works of mine, and the rest are Todd Reynolds' works.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to get to Todd Reynolds in just a minute, but the other thing that I've noticed, maybe not right at first, but soon after you guys sort of kicked off, it seemed like you were looking to collaborate with other artists and other performers, and even people that weren't musicians, through dance. I know your wife is a dancer, right?
Sure, yes.
And I mean, but not just her, you know, you've really, the impression that I got anyway is that you've really consciously reached out across the panoply of...
I have. And certainly a good starting point was the fact that my wife is a well-known modern dancer, modern dance choreographer in Southern California. So that was an obvious starting point, not just from her, but the context I had of other people through her. I have sought out filmmakers and a couple of playwrights along the way as well. I do think that you can form a more interesting program without diminishing the music if you have multiple mediums on the same show, particularly in this day and age where so much is so visually oriented that a bunch of musicians sitting there, you know, it has a harder time making that compelling case to be, you know, visually as interesting as what you might see on other things on a Friday night. I also find it creatively stimulating to think outside. And it makes you look at how to put work together differently when you have somebody else's vision, and in another meeting for that matter, to actually be working with. So yeah, that was a very conscious decision.
Now the concert that you're presenting this coming at the end of the month, on January 30th,
yes.
Right? The person that you're collaborating with for this show, tell me about him.
Well, Todd Reynolds is a rather extraordinary and unusual musician, at least for a violinist. You know, most violinists come up through classical trained traditions, or if not, country and western, or something along those lines. Well, Todd is someone that grew up here in LA and studied with Heifetz, actually, at a very young age here. He certainly went through all the trials and tribulations of being a classically oriented musician and quite accomplished at that. But at some point, I'm not sure when, Todd realized that he wanted to be more than just simply another very, very fine classical violinist, and started looking towards contemporary music groups and also technology to become what is now really a unique musical lifestyle that he's formed. He is one of the first call violinists in New York for modern groups, such as he's the string leader of the Steve Reich Ensemble. He was the founding violinist in Yo-Yo Ma's Silk Road Project. He tours with an alt-rock group called The Books. He's been on tour much this year with performance artist Meredith Monk. And in his own work, he does a great deal with a laptop and a program called Ableton Live, where he's setting up looping and interacting with it on stage. So you have someone who has unbelievable classically trained violin chops, but also knows their way around a live interactive DJ program too. So that's a combination you don't find too often. So I was, I've been, you know, thrilled to form a, you know, friendship and, you know, a musical relationship with Todd over the last few years. Last year he asked me if I'd write a group with him with my ensemble, so that took very little convincing. And so this is actually the results of that, and the very first premiere will be this Friday night.
Oh, great. So the piece that's being performed is something that you wrote for your ensemble and him.
Yeah, one of the pieces on the program. I wrote a 12-minute work for him with the full ensemble, and then we'll do a couple other pieces as the ensemble alone, and then Todd will also do some of his solo work with laptop and video on stage also.
Wow, that's great.
So that's a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a very diverse
it is,
evening.
It is,
yeah. Now, you've also done a number of recordings over the years, right?
We have two CDs from the early years, year one and year three. We've done some other single work recording projects along the way. I'm actually looking very hard now to actually figure out a way to get a third CD release sometime in the next year. So it has been a while. And we're really itching to put something out.
Well, with the advent of, you know, all this great software that you can carry around in your notebook, what's the sort of stumbling block to making that happen?
Well, you're right that we can get something recorded and recorded well at this point. It would be nice if it had an association with a label for distribution purposes. Mm-hmm. But we are now getting to the point where I do believe you can forego that and just be a download item to some degree. To get better reviewers and better publications to take note of you, a lot of times you still need that fancy packaging and the validation of a known brand name or label as such, or at least I believe that's still somewhat the case. So there's been some reluctance to sort of go it alone again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I may be getting over that soon. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, the paradigm is really shifting.
It is.
I mean, the whole business model of music has been almost completely devolved. Mm-hmm. You know, so now, when you're looking forward to recording, do you think about writing new work for a new CD, or do you think about taking the work that you've already created over the last 7 years?
Well, to this point, I believe that we tend to record best with work that we have done well and know well in live performance. Mm-hmm. That's not always the case, but I do think recordings come out better when you're placed in front of those microphones and you turn a recorder on, if you don't know the piece really intimately well, it can make for a stiffer performance. Mm-hmm. And there have been times where we have recorded or performed things where we thought we knew the piece fully, and then only after subsequent performances do we realize that we really could have gone much further with it, and we regretted how early we moved on that. Mm-hmm. So I do prefer to know the piece. Particularly, it's nice to record when you don't have to do a lot of overdubbing, and you can record as in a live set of circumstances with each other, I think makes for an exciting recording. So to know the piece in that respect, I think, still does help.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because I think a lot of people who aren't musicians, it would be hard for them to understand that, you know, if you've written something, then you should be intimately aware of its subtleties. But the truth is that as you play something, and especially when you're playing in an ensemble, it's not always evident what's there until you...
That's right.
Until...
Well, and I don't pretend to control 100%. I think most composers know that there's a certain element that's only in play once the performers get a hold of a piece. That's true. And I don't... knowing I know who I'm writing for and the circumstances I'm writing for leaves me a little bit more flexibility to not be... necessarily notate every dynamic shift, every articulation. And it's not that I don't mean to be vigilant about my writing, but I do trust that I can leave some of this up to the performers and the rehearsal process so that there can be more subtlety in the decision making than I would make simply by what you could write down on paper. Not only that, but as in playing one's own work, I have to shift into the mode of being a violinist and out of the mode of composer. And in some ways, I have to look at the piece as if I did not write it when I look at it, my part as a violinist in the process. It's sort of having to step back from it as much as I can.
Interesting. One of the other things that I remember from one of your early performances that I saw was the relationship between the cello and the violin is really interesting in your compositions. It seems like there's these two single note voices that are really working sort of in concert with each other. And there's a lovely interplay. And then also there's a great interplay between the rhythmic elements in the marimba and the vibes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also there was some electronics going on as well back in the day.
Yes. Though in some ways I feel like particularly rhythmically, as a violinist and cellist, we have to think, and bass clarinet now, we have to think almost as a percussionist in this respect, and think in a percussion mode in terms of how we approach playing on top of the beat and playing to them. They don't have the nuance of length of note so much so. So we have to move to where they are in terms of how, you know, when they strike a note to be with them. It's almost a percussion quintet sometimes, in a rhythmic sense.
Interesting.
The clarinet did add a lot of options though, so that violin and cello are not necessarily as wedded to each other all the time. Mm-hmm. In practice, it's turned out that I've had clarinet and cello be much more wedded to each other, and as a violinist, I tend to go more, you know, down my own path through pieces a little bit more so.
Interesting. Wow, that's great. Well, and the other thing that I remember is that the musicians that you have playing with you, and aside from just being fantastic, really seemed to engage deeply in the music. You know, to me, the feeling that I got was, you know, because you've seen, I'm sure, performances where people are, they're sight reading the music, and they can
sure.
sight read a cold, but there's always that next step. You
sure,
know,
and that goes back to the recording question, too, right. About not recording something you don't know yet well or know as a group yet well. But that's also a big reason to form a group, is you can get the finest players and still not really have a performance that's very musically nuanced. And so I'm looking for people that are committed to the work. And not only that, but you can live with the work for 5 or 10 performances. And I would much rather a performance that had its imperfections on a technical level, but that we really know the piece and can anticipate each other on stage and understand the work in its whole. You know, that makes a much more interesting performance, I think, at the end of the day, and much more satisfying to play when you actually know the people and know the work, and there's a certain confidence that brings.
So, the other thing I was going to try to get to was this idea that you know, we were talking about designations before, and somebody, I was telling somebody, a friend of mine, about the show, and he was asking, well, what kind of music it is. Is it, and I was sort of racking my mind, and I guess the term that I came up with was new music, which I think a lot of people sort of bandy about in one way or another.
Right.
But I mean...
No, it's hard. It's our hardest challenge, frankly. Thank God for websites and people being able to go hear a sample, because you're right, and new music can be very loaded. And so for some people, that means, you know, the latest tune from an indie band they may or may not know. And for some people, that means an academic style of, mm-hmm. of writing out of the classical tradition that I don't think we're exactly that either.
Right.
So that I would think is our greatest advantage and our greatest difficulty, because I don't think that there's many others sounding quite like we do. But that's also the problem, is how do you get people there if you can't familiarize them with what it is they're going to spend money to come see? So we do hope for word of mouth, and that people actually take a listen online first or by some means, because that tagline has always been very, very elusive. Because mm-hmm. Some people think, you know, you're a violinist, or you're termed a composer, or it's new music, or called chamber music, that they have sort of a, you know, a vision of powdered wigs and a recital hall. And we're pretty far from that. Yet we're not a rock band, and we're not a jazz group, and we're and so, but I think I'd like to think that we appeal to what people enjoy in all those things, something from the classical realm, and that it's more complex writing than you might get, say, on Top 40 radio, but then from the energy and the diversity and the rhythmic qualities of a rock or a pop band would also, you know, be attractive to people as well. But how you describe that in a sentence is, you know, after 10 years, it's still hard to figure that out.
Well, you know, one of the things I think that a lot of people have sort of this preconception about is you know, I guess what I would say is your music isn't difficult. I think anyone could enjoy it. Anyone who has any kind of interest in music could enjoy it. It's not so far afield that you're going to walk away scratching your head going, well, I'm not really sure what that was.
Right. No, yeah. Nor is it intended to be so. I think to artificially try to make your music difficult is not something I particularly have interest in.
But it also has, like you were saying before, this great sort of swinging rhythmic kind of energy. It has wonderful sort of melodic complexity. The virtuoso playing of the pieces is incredibly high. So you have a group of really excellent musicians playing this music, and it's great. It's really fun. So,
well, thanks.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the other question I was wondering about, I was thinking about this on the drive over, was have there been other ensembles to perform your music?
Well, not much, if only because there's not many that have two percussionists, a violinist, a cellist, and a clarinetist. Most groups of, say, this size or attempting to do this kind of thing are going to have a pianist or only one percussionist, or maybe have a flute player or a guitar player or something like that. So again, it's one of our advantages in that we're unique, but at the same time, it's also a hindrance. But yeah, there have been some groups do some of the things, and also in other arrangements at times. There's not that many groups at this point is part of the issue. We're kind of heading into a day and age where you're either a rock band, you're a straight up classical string quartet, or you're a guy on stage with a laptop. And we're really none of those things. So as a genre, if there is one, there's perhaps a decreasing number attempting to do what we're doing as a sort of a 4 to 6 person group like this.
Well, I mean, like we were just saying, I think one of the reasons for that is because, you know, it requires a high level of skill and a willingness to have that commitment to the music, you know. Even being in a rock band is challenging these days because, you know, you're just like herding cats in a way, you know what I mean? But you know, having a laptop and sitting by yourself, there's no discussion, there's no arguments.
Right.
There's always that.
And it's much more cost efficient.
right. And no lugging. No lugging.
That's right.
Big instrument.
That's right.
I remember you did a performance at the Long Beach Playhouse that I sort of co-coordinated. And I remember seeing the big marimba being carried up the stairs.
Yeah. Yeah, our load in and load out is not pretty. And, you know, we often have a 5-octave marimba vibraphone, and then we'll have 30 power cords and 20 audio cords on stage and a couple of PA cabinets. So it does take us 3 or 4 hours sometimes to set up for a full show.
Right.
But, you know, it's very hard you know, it's one of these things that sort of, it's very hard to slim down as you go along. Things inevitably sort of grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, that's the rub, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So then on Friday, what time does the show start?
8 p.m.
8 p.m., and it's $10, right?
For general admission, it's $10, that's right.
And students get in for less?
For $7.
$7, that's a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And people will enjoy this, I think.
Well, I think if you don't like this, you'll like that. I mean, there's going to be a lot of things on the program, and certainly Todd Reynolds is someone you haven't seen before. Even if you've seen my ensemble, you know, the attraction of Todd in itself, I think, would be quite something, because you're getting a world-class violinist who also works with DJ looping and interactive video. So, there's plenty of diversity, particularly, even by our standards, particularly on this show.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much. I really look forward to seeing you perform.
Glad to do so.
Thank you.